Hello everyone, I am Alba Pardo and this is How I Did This, a Women in Action Sports podcast about truly inspiring women that have worked hard to carve a company, a project, or a career out of their deepest passions. For this podcast, I like to take the conversations not so much on what they do for a living, but on how they got there, what inspired them, and what challenges they had to overcome. Together, we distill their learned lessons and revisit the steps they would absolutely take again. And we learn about what are their lifelines and their go-tos, as well as the trickier parts of their journey. Throughout these interviews, I hope we can all learn and appreciate together the many different meanings of success, but I also hope we can get inspired as much as I do every time I get to interview one of our amazing guests. And for this very first episode ever of How I Did This, I reached out to Lisa Slagle, founder of the creative agency Willy Creative. And I don't want to give away too much before I get started, but I can tell you that Lisa is a determined, hardworking, no bullshit creative whose life has been shaped by her passion for snowboarding. Trained as a graphic designer in the Colorado State University, Lisa started her business on her own and with very little resources. But soon after, her company started growing, and she has been the proud owner of Willy Creative for 13 years. And of course, throughout these 13 years, they've been full of changes, shifts, and growth. From getting unintentionally stranded in Montana and getting to set up shop there for 10 years, to then expanding to a team of more than 30 people and two offices in two different states, to more recently, going completely remote, deserting their office, and sticking by it. Lisa's and Willy's journey is exciting, inspiring, and most importantly, it's relatable. No fairy tales, but as she says, just good work. On the basis of craft, connection, and change, she has built a little empire of her own. And I must say, after this conversation with her, I couldn't really sleep for two nights. Just reflecting and taking everything in she tells us, how authentically she talks about it, and how brutally honest you have to be with yourself to thrive. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Let's jump right in. Welcome, Lisa, and thank you so much for sitting and talking to us today.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be talking to you across the world.
Aww. So to start, I mean, normally I ask for people to tell their story, but today it's more than just your story, it's also your company. But to start things off, tell us a bit about yourself. You know, where are you from? Where are you now? What do you love? What makes you get up in the morning? What do you hate? What moves you?
Okay. Well, my name is Lisa Slagle, and I currently live in Crested Butte, Colorado. I'm from Fort Collins, Colorado, which is about, I don't know, 5 hours away from here, and became really obsessed with snowboarding as a kid. I saw the movie Out Cold in a movie theater when I was like 14. And I remember that was the first time I had seen like a female role model in a ski movie. You know, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to become a snowboarder. And so I did. I centered my whole life and all my decisions and my degree around being able to go up to the mountains and snowboard. And, bounced around in different mountain towns as one does in their early 20s after college. I thought I would be a pro snowboarder. And then eventually realized I needed to make some money. So I started freelancing using my graphic design degree. And then all my friends started getting jobs inside the industry. And I started, you know, being able to do design work for cool brands all over the outdoor industry. And then, yeah, I ended up in Montana chasing snow. I thought I was going to Canada and my car died, which is hilarious. So I just stayed. I stayed in Montana for 10 years. And things that light me up are like making things with other people. Like I really enjoy the act of making things, like the creative process and refining it and letting every person, you know, encouraging every person to bring their unique lens of the world to a project. And then I love writing. And I think that being able to articulate things that people have always felt, but maybe not have words for, is probably my favorite thing in the world. And kind of ultimately what I think is my purpose. So
I already have so many questions after this little introduction, but before we get into that, I want you to introduce Wheelie Creative and what it is today.
I didn't even talk about Wheelie, did I?
No, exactly. But I didn't want you to. I wanted to talk about yourself. So it's great.
Yeah. So Wheelie is a creative agency. I started in 2009, started out as just me. And then for like, I think 2 years, I didn't have employees. And then I started getting busier and busier, started hiring people. And then built a creative agency basically at the age of 25. And I had no business being anyone's employer. I had no leadership training. I was just really good at getting people to rally behind a vision or like, let's get really excited about making things or like, I'm not a control freak. So just like putting the right people in the right positions and being like, hey, let's make stuff. Wheelie is a creative agency for outdoor brands mostly, although we work with brands that want to be perceived as outdoorsy, like banks or credit unions or things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's wildly fun. So I think that creative work can change the world. So basically we try to take on clients that use capitalism for like positive change in the world. So that's kind of our barometer these days. And I feel very fortunate to be able to choose who we work with and who we don't work with.
Right. So let me rewind a little bit there. You start as a graphic designer on your own. Is that right?
Yeah. And this was before social media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you go from, because for me, I think when you're an entrepreneur and you're starting something, the leap from being yourself to employing other people is probably one of the biggest ones, if not the greatest one, because it's, you go from being alone to becoming a team, and not only a team, but you're bossing them around, as you said. So how do you take on that risk? Because more than anything, for me, it's a risk.
Yeah, it was intense. It wasn't, I did it from a place of like, I'm way too busy and I need help, you know? So it wasn't a place of like, intentionality. Necessarily. Yeah, it wasn't like, oh, I'll build this beautiful company and this is the vision and here's the career path for every person and you know, here's my financial plan for the next 5 years. It wasn't like that. It was more chaos of like, oh shit, who can build websites? Okay, cool. Who's good at project management? You seem fun. You know, like just
the first person or the first profile you hired?
First person I hired was a graphic designer, production level, entry level position, just to get some of the work done that needed to be done. And then I quickly hired a web developer. I was like building websites in Dreamweaver. This is how long ago that was. So I had to have somebody who was like good with Dreamweaver as well as all the new platforms that were coming out. And then I immediately hired a project manager, which for me is a really important position to have.
Yeah,
because that's the person that's like talking to clients, running schedules, and then I can focus more on creative work if I want to.
Yeah, and then somewhere on your website or on your newsletters, I read that you went from being your own to started building a team to get an office to then getting a second office in Denver.
In Denver, I had an office in Whitefish, Montana, where I owned that building, where we were for 7 years, and then rented an office in downtown Denver as well.
So at one point you were running two different offices?
Yes. And I was like a carny. I was like driving that 15 hour drive, living in my truck every week. It was kind of like really miserable. But I did that I think a really important thing about women owning their business is that you can run it however you want, and it can change and it can grow with you, and it can have seasons and it can have cycles. And like, I had the Denver office because I was listening to these advisors I had hired, and they were like, you need to be in a city. Like, no one's going to hire your company if it's in a little tiny mountain town in Montana. Is there even internet in Montana? You know, that type of thing. And I was like, okay, sure, I'll throw something up in Denver. And I kind of did it at the advice of like, this is the path you have to take. Why aren't you taking it? So I was like, okay, I'll fucking take it. Oh, can I swear?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I mean,
sorry.
Who are we?
Okay. I swear a lot, but
yes, I did too. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I took the advice and I don't know, it never felt good the whole time. So I had it for exactly 1 year. I told myself I'd make it a year. And then I shut that down and we just had the office in Montana. And then most recently I sold the office building because when we put the business online for COVID, I was like, this is so unnecessary.
So just to recap for everyone that's listening so they understand, because I know this story because I follow the journey quite closely, but you went from, you know, starting yourself, creating a team, getting an office, to opening a second office, to then go back to one, and now you're a completely remote working agency with no headquarters.
Yes, and I love it. We have no brick and mortar office.
So if you were to start from zero right now with the little bit of knowledge you might have acquired these years,
yeah,
would you go straight to remote? Or do you think the journey has actually given you a lot?
Gosh, welcome to my existential crisis. it's given me a lot, right? Because I've had over 40 employees, managed millions and millions and millions of dollars of creative projects, creative directed for over 300 brands. Like I've done all these things that have gotten me to where I am today. And I'm grateful for that journey. I have learned and many of my weaknesses have been exposed, but also some of my strengths. And so I think ultimately the thing I wish I had told myself, the thing I wish I had known, or the advice I would give to myself at a younger age is that, your business doesn't have to look a certain way. And like with, especially with agencies, it's always like, well, this is, you know, you're expected, I can talk about creative work all day, but you're expected to do these like pitches where you're like being compared apples to apples with other agencies. Mm-hmm. So there's this weird standard that like marketing teams have where they're like, you know, they go through their stupid RFP checklist and they're like, how many employees do you have? And I'm like, why is volume a metric of quality? That's a ridiculous question. Or like, just like these strange metrics, right? And it's so odd because at the end of the day, you're not comparing apples to apples. When you're working with creatives, it's like apples to oranges to celery, to, you know, like everybody's bringing their own thing. And so I think there was a lot of pressure in the agency world to be a certain way and do things a certain way. And that so like antithetical to the actual effect of like really strong creativity in the world.
When I look at Willy today, or everything you put out there for the company, it looks like it's a very value-driven company. And normally with agencies, I feel like it's not normally that way because you kind of acquire the values of the companies you work with. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You choose the clients if you can that you work with, but normally the agency is kind of like this blank slate. They normally don't have a stand for anything. It's their clients that do, and then they try to communicate that message in the best case scenario. But for you and what I see from Willy right now, I mean, you've been in business for like 13, 14 years. Mm-hmm. Is this like very value-driven agency? And as you said, you didn't start that way. What things do you think have crafted this very well put, you know, base for business as it is today?
What an acute observation. Like, I've never even thought about that. But yeah, I mean, the goal is to always have space for our clients' brand values. But it has to align with what we are doing, what we believe. And I think that that came to be because, at the risk of sounding maybe like arrogant, we're really good at what we do. And so if we are going to amplify a brand, I personally have a problem if it's like, if it goes against my, I don't even want to say morals, but like my values. If it goes against my values, then, or like my team's values, it's definitely worth looking into. And a conversation we've always had internally at Willy is like, not everyone voted the same, obviously, at our company. And like people bring their own lens of the world to the meeting room, you know, like, and I think diversity and different opinions, obviously, pressure test the work and make it better and better. So I think that it's really good to have differentness rather than a bunch of sameness. I don't want to homogenize the creative process at all, but I do think that like being aware of the fact that we are good at what we do and we can help companies sell shit. So like, hopefully it's not shit. Hopefully it's, you know, things that amplify the world and make it a better place.
I'm gonna read a sentence you wrote in one of your newsletters. Is that okay?
Okay.
I can be a feminist, a capitalist, and an environmentalist all at once, simply by embracing the truth that we are all human with bodies, emotions, and a lifetime of favorite jackets, shoes, and ways we like to spend our free time.
Mm-hmm.
Please explain.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that I've had a little bit of conflict and tension within my own mindset around like capitalism and feminism and like, can those two things coexist? For a while I thought no, but I actually think yes. It just has to be a new way of doing things. And I can be both of those things at once because I am a capitalist and I am a feminist, right? And so I do, but the way that that is exposed within Wheelie is being able, like, we are closed on Fridays. It's always a 4-day work week. And that's because I don't think we all need to work 5 days a week just because that's what every other agency does. Or like being able to like take a rest day, or being able to, I don't know, like set your own schedule around when your body feels the most creative. Or like, yeah, just really acknowledging that everyone who has ever worked at Wheelie is a person, not a position. And that's where I've run into like problems as an employer, is I see everyone as a person, not a position. And I hire the coolest and best people that are out there, you know? So it's like really hard to not be their friend because, and they need, like, they don't need a friend, they need a boss, right? And so that was really hard in Montana because it was a small town in Whitefish, and I would hire the best and smartest, most talented, coolest, fucking amazing humans, you know, and just had to separate myself of like, okay, if I hire this person, I'm never going to be their friend. You know, I'm not that old. I'm kind of the same age as most of my employees. So like, yeah, it just was always really hard because they are humans. Like it is people, not positions. And so, sometimes I don't think I'm cut out to be a boss because I like everybody so much.
Well, it sounds like a great place to work at. But, you know, if I look at from the lens of a client or someone that wants to work with you, I mean, all these rules or like structures you have in place sound absolutely brilliant. But at the same time, you have to conform. What you were saying, like, I don't want to conform in this process that everybody thinks, you know, you need to have as a creative agency. But on the flip side, as a, you know, you need to conform to certain standards pricing for one. And how do you even, like right now, because you have this portfolio and this experience, I believe it might be easier to kind of sell your concept and your way of working. But how do you even start there when you don't have the credibility to back you up that what you're trying to do is the right way to do things, or the ways you want to do things, right? So how do you even get clients to be on board with you when you don't have maybe that credibility just yet?
Usually I start the conversation about like what they want or why they're looking for an agency. And then, okay, cool. What do you think you're going to make from an agency? And then I ask a question, what do you think it's going to cost you if you don't, you know? And then we start looking at like, okay, so that's what you won't be making if you, you know, like you kind of flip the conversation around a little bit. And then I think too, just like making sure it is a good fit, because we're not a great fit for everybody. And then also, it's like building a house, right? Like no one in what other industry would it be like, hey, you just bought some, like, hi, I just bought some land, design a house for me. I'm not going to tell you my budget. And then I'm going to pick the house that's the one I feel is the best, but I'm going to compare it to all these other builders who are also going to build me houses. You know, like it's so fucked. So what I do is I'm like, hey, what is your budget? And that is how large I can dream. Like, yeah, give me the parameter of your budget, and then we can tell you, hey, here's kind of what we would do with this budget. And this is what you want to get out of it. This is what you think you're going to lose if you don't do it. So here's what I think you should do.
I like this because it's kind of setting real expectations rather than just dreaming to dream, which I feel like in our industry, the passion tax often comes in play.
Yeah.
And they just take advantage of it. So I like your way of putting it, like, you know, I'm passionate and I like to dream, but tell me how big I can dream.
Right. If you don't have a budget, we're bringing in helicopters. You know, like sure, let's do helicopter, like let's build a terrain park. Like, you know what I mean? If clients are like, there's no budget, do whatever you want. You know, and that always makes people laugh, but then it also puts it in perspective where they're like, okay, because I'm like, don't waste my time. If I'm gonna be providing you with a six-figure solution to your problem and you have, you know, low five figures, we're not even in the same conversation.
Right. Let's rewind again a little bit, because I feel like we get into the really thick of it, which I love, and I can sense you do too. But you know, we're talking about this big step from being your own to hiring the first few people in your company. And I think another big step might be when you stop, or when you start getting national clients, not only just regional or local. How do you go from, again, A to B?
Yeah, really good work is my best answer for that. Really, really good work, really interesting work. And then just like being willing to put yourself out there and like showing up in a very professional manner and having the skills to back that. And so, you know, being able to show those things is critical.
Right. Define good work for me. Sorry, maybe it's a bit tricky one.
I think good work is like work that is unique. Like obviously the basics, right? The tactical things are covered, like really high quality imagery, interesting casting, you know, the products are shown and then you can prove like ROI, like, hey, we produced this campaign and it brought in, you know, three times the revenue of what they spent on this. So they tripled their money. They doubled their money. You know, like having some stats to back it up, obviously. And then I just think from a creative standpoint, like work that pushes the industry. So maybe showing an adaptive athlete or maybe showing women doing things or, you know, whatever, right? Like there's just so many different ways to portray a sport or tell the story of a product. So bringing something interesting to the table as well.
So nowadays, do you do mostly creative work or do you do some kind of managing leadership or a bit of both?
I do both. And I try to always be working on one project at a time to stay sharp, stay relevant, stay interested, stay challenging. So I've never left the creative process at my company because I enjoy it. I don't need to work on every single project anymore by any means. And I'm also loving assembling teams built out of independent contractors as well as my in-house team. So more of like a hybrid model is really fun. In my opinion, there are three types of creatives and they're all important and we can go back and forth personally on where we land on the spectrum, but I think there are three types of creatives. One, the type of creative who works at an agency to gain enough experience to then go freelance. Two, the type of creative that freelances successfully, they show up, they know what they're doing, they get shit done, and they value freedom. And three, the type of creative who has tons of experience, but they love working in-house for a brand or an agency because they value stability more than freedom. And so I think that being able to utilize all three of those mindsets produces beautiful work.
Wow. And you went from just being on your own to being the kind of person that sees these profiles, right? Let's talk about this leadership learning curve, because I'm pretty sure it's still kind of happening day to day. What was the hardest thing you've learned about leadership? Maybe you touched on it, the one of not becoming friends, but you can still be friends, right? Or
I mean, I think the thing that's hardest for me in America, there's so many laws for employers. Like if one of my employees tells me they're quitting, I legally cannot ask them why, where are you going? what are you doing next? Like, I legally can't say that. And obviously the human in me wants to be like, sick, what's next for you? Like, let's celebrate your journey, right? I can't ask them that. I have to just be like, oh, okay. And then it's just like this cold thing. And they're kind of looking at me like, do you not give a shit? Or like, oh, wow. You know, they might interpret that as like, Lisa's mad that I'm quitting, right? But like, so it's just this strange balance of like being this law-abiding employer with the ability to be misunderstood.
Wow.
And I hate it.
So what do you like about leadership?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. Like, that's the thing about being an employer. And so like, it's easier for me when I contract with independent contractors because none of those rules exist, right? Like, you're when you hire an independent contractor, you legally cannot tell them when, where, or how to work, but like, you can say whatever you like. You know, it's like a very different dynamic than when you're an employer employee. And so I kind of personally like that. So I tend to do like on big production days where we're shooting commercials or something, I bring in more of a team of independent contractors just because things can get out of hand. You never know. Like, there's a lot of boundaries crossed. Like, you might be all staying at the same VRBO or, you know, like, it's just a little bit different than the structure of an office.
Wow. That's crazy. Let me restructure my thoughts. I think though, being an employer is different from being a leader.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think in order to run a successful business, you probably have to be both.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we had a woman who worked at Wheelie for 6 years, I think, something like that, who was our director of accounts, and she was the most phenomenal leader. Like, she was, you know, she was not the employer, but her leadership was tremendously good. She was very clear with her expectations and very like straightforward, and also very loving toward the team. So I think that like her leadership was beautiful. I think my leadership style is I'm not a micromanager. I don't know. There's a lot of people who have worked with me who call me like the ultimate hype woman. Because I tend to just be like, hell yeah, you made that, like, holy shit. Or like, yeah, we're gonna do this, like, wake up early for sunrise, I'll bring coffee. Like, I tend to just bring the stoke, and not, I have an interesting relationship to control, because I don't need to control the creative process. And I also know that fear is the fastest thing to kill creativity. So I think my leadership is based on like, okay, you said you were gonna do this, let's fucking go, like, let's do it.
It sounds like you're a very trusting leader.
Super trusting, maybe too trusting.
Have you had, of course, the flip, the other side of the coin is, have you had disappointments when you've been too trusting? And how do you manage that line, right? How do you manage
that line? Absolutely. I think it just comes down to like the ability to be misunderstood. And like that mostly goes with employees, like W-2 employees, not contractors, where like, they create their own narrative around like what they want out of a workplace. Or like, I had one employee who felt very assured on how that person thought I should be spending my time. And I was like, okay, like that's your shit. You know, like it's not somebody's, somebody doesn't get to dictate how I spend my time, you know? So there's just been like weird personality quirks that come together, and creatives also have like a lot of passion, and I don't know, but like we always get the work done, and that's our batting average is astounding in terms of like making amazing work. And I just, yeah, I think being able to like, I'm pretty vulnerable most of the time in how I lead. Like, I don't know, I don't, there's not a lot of like fronting. Filters. I'm like, yeah, well, or just like I don't front around like, and this is how it will be, and it will be smooth, and I will sit here with my director's monitor. No, it's not like that. I'm usually in it. I like to be in it with people, and just be super curious, and ask questions. I have never yelled at work ever. I think just being really curious, like, hey, what's going on? How come you didn't hit that deadline?
And I mean, you must have frustrations. So how do you handle those? Because I don't believe that you're always curious and you're always happy. Like, there must be frustration there somewhere and you just happen to manage it. How do you manage that? Because I get frustrated and I do yell. So how do you manage that?
I mean, unfortunately, I do think it requires a really supportive man in my life to be a good partner to me, because like, yeah, I can hold it together at work and then I get home and it's like, hey, where do you want to go for dinner? And I'm like, don't ask me any questions. I can't make another decision. I don't know. I think, I think that having a personal support community that's not work related is really good to keep me in check. And then also just like, fucking thank God for action sports, like snowboarding, mountain biking, like I can go move my body and kind of like work out my shit. But like, usually if I'm really frustrated by something at work, it is related to how I've not communicated well, or like how I've contributed toward, you know, whatever's going on. Like, I usually have to sit with like how I've contributed toward it. And usually it's like very heavily on me.
Yeah, that's the things we always get more frustrated about, is our own mistakes, right? Or our own mishandling of things. And it sounds like being an employer is something that you don't really love, in the sense of the legal side of things. Have you ever considered of kind of changing that completely and just getting, you know, as you said, you like to work with contractors and independent creatives?
Yeah, I've reduced my staff considerably in the last year, and gone with independent contractors, which I really like, because it's more like, during the pandemic, I was reading When Things Fall Apart by Pema Chodron. And that book is basically that things fall apart and they come together again, and they fall apart and they come together again in new ways. And to basically like let go and not grasp, right? That's kind of the point of that book. And it made me think about like, that's how creative teams are. So if we're shooting a commercial involving skiing, I'm going to pull in a DP and a crew that can carry their gear into the backcountry. Or like if we're shooting mountain biking, I'll pull in somebody who's like excellent at shooting against, you know, somebody who's really good with colors and really good with like red and red rock and orange and like purple clothing. It's really fun, and it makes better work to be able to like cherry pick the team for the job rather than just bring in work because there's someone sitting in a seat at my company.
How do you think this contributes to the industry? Like, if this model was to kind of take over more and more, which I think in some parts is.
It's going to.
How do you think that's going to affect the whole thing? Like competition or collaboration or, you know.
Here's my thoughts. I have a little bit of disdain toward the typical agency model. I always have. I think that like, why be FM radio when Spotify exists? You know, and that's how I feel about changing agency models, because independent contractors, like building a team out of independent contractors, is the work that's coming out of that becomes less about, this is interesting, let me try to not be too heady about it, becomes more about making work rather than company culture. And so like when we have the office, it's so heavily focused on company culture. Clients are paying a premium for my company culture, right? What does that involve? Every Monday we have a meeting. That meeting is an hour long. I have my entire staff at the meeting. I have to come up with the funding to pay those people for an hour, right? So that comes out of project budgets. Super normal, right? McDonald's Monday. Like all these things build a company culture. And that's the premium. That's what you're paying for, is a unified team built by culture. And then when it's an independent contractor and you're just coming together for the work, and then everybody like disperses and they go make the work, it's not about McDonald's Monday. It's not about Monday morning meetings. It's about making great work. And so the culture is essentially the joy of creativity. Less about like, I work with all my best friends inside of an office, and we, you know, like, it's not about culture, it's about the work.
Right. Two things about this. One, if there's no company culture because there's no place for it, do you feel the obligation as a employer, or maybe as a contracting of these contractors to allow them. You know, maybe that's why then you kind of be like, all right, Fridays we don't work. So you they actually have the time to build their own culture with their communities or their circles of friends or people or sports or whatever it is they do. Do you think you kind of have to balance it out somehow?
I mean, I think you nailed it with the word community, right? Like, you're essentially it's building this network that becomes a community, and everybody's like working together, rallying toward the same thing, you know? So like on a shoot day, for example, there's a level of improv that comes in. Where, you know, like you try to plan for it, but it's still improv. Like,
anything can happen.
Anything can go happen, like starting with the weather, starting with talent, you know. Or if it's cold, like batteries don't like staying charged. Like there's all these variables. And so it's sort of this like improv situation. And so I think that I lost my train of thought on that. But basically,
you were talking about the community.
Oh yeah. And so you're like, everybody's rallying together, and it's this incredibly intimate container of like, the act of making things with people is like remarkably intimate, and you get to know people in all these different ways, and everybody's rallying toward the same thing. And so like, that's a scenario, I think, like replicated in the military, right? Like, where people are like stationed places together, and they're the only ones that experience that thing on that day. And I think that honestly, like creative teams are a little bit like that too, where like you're in it and you have to be fully present to create. And so like the community aspect happens, you know, instantly during production. And so I try to always like hook people up with swag. My ideal, like my dream that I'm working on right now, is being able to provide some type of health insurance co-op for freelancers, just to make Wheelie like the fucking best place to freelance. You know, just to try to come up with some incentives and pull in top talent, which.
Yeah, because that's definitely a big topic, of course, in the US. We don't necessarily have that in Europe, but yeah, I guess that's the big difference for you guys from being self-employed to working at a company. And so my second part of that question was, right, so as an entrepreneur or the capitalist side of you, growth, the definition of growth, because for a traditional entrepreneur or a capitalist, it would be definitely, you know, having a bigger office, having a bigger company, having more employees, having more revenue. What does growth mean for you and Wheelie?
That's a solid question. I think ultimately, like, my personal growth as a creative and as a woman has been a little stunted by Wheelie, quite frankly, because, you know, keeping Wheelie going is a tremendous amount of work. And I think like that I sacrificed my own personal growth. I mean, I grew tremendously in many ways. Every day was a challenge for the last 13 years, but I think it, you know, ultimately like I wanted to grow in certain ways, or like I wanted to go to Costa Rica for a month. Like that's not going to happen, you know? So I think being able to like, separate myself from Wheelie has been huge. I've been working really hard on that for the last few years, is really like separating who I am and my identity, as well as like if somebody hires Wheelie, they might not work directly with me. Just things like that has been huge for just my personal psyche. But yeah, I think that being able to grow Wheelie now, it doesn't look the same as it did. And I love being able to like elevate other people, other women. I still love making work, but I also love putting the right people in the right places and watching them make something beautiful and being the person that provided the container for them.
Wow. So you're becoming this leader in the way of creating these positions for all these people. And that is beautiful. And that for me is a great way to show growth professionally and personally.
Absolutely. And just like being able to write my book, or like put some of my creative energy into personal work rather than client work, is the thing I'm most excited about in this life right now. But yeah, definitely being able to like have a little bit better balance and work-life balance.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with my next question. It sounds like, you know, for you, entrepreneurship is really hard to balance and separate yourself from Willie and have this space of your own. How does that look like? How is it possible to even have that space ever? Because for me personally, every project I've done, it's always been sucked me right into it. And the day I've started to separate myself from it, it doesn't necessarily die, but it completely changes. And sometimes it's good and easier to kind of undergo that transition, but other times it's just completely and utterly destroying you as a, you know, it destroys you as an entrepreneur, as a, you think you're not worth it anymore. Do you think there is a possibility to kind of draw a thicker line? I'm not saying separate completely, but draw a thicker line between you and a business when you basically created it and still run it?
That's a tremendously good question as well. Because so I have spent a lot of time in the last year thinking about that, because I moved back to Colorado and my business was still in Montana, you know, and I was just like, I had felt trapped in Montana for years because my business had been there and I wanted to be back in the sunshine with my friends in Colorado. And one day I just left. I like just hit my limit and I was like, I'm going to Colorado. And then I kind of like called my right-hand person and was like, hey, I think I'm just going to stay. She's like, wait, what? And you know, and again, like the way I kind of do life, like nothing was very premeditated. It wasn't intentional. It's the same way I got employees. It was like not thinking about it, which is funny because I'm such an intentional, such a thoughtful human that like sometimes when it comes to like my own personal life decisions, I'm just like, ah, it's happening. But so yeah, I left my company. And I bought a place in Crested Butte and like, I'm here, you know? And, so I think just like forcing that change has been hellacious. It's been a really hard year. But I also think it's been a really great year. And I think 2023 is going to be like my favorite year ever because, I forced the change. Like I guess the definition of change is when it's people make decisions to change when it's too painful to stay the same. And I think I had hit my limit in terms of like my company dictating my lifestyle rather than my lifestyle dictating the company in a way. Like I was getting resentful of people when they would like come through my company, my employees, and they would like learn a bunch and then they would quit and leave. And I'd be like, I want to quit. Like, I want to go do something else, you know, because I did, I wanted to leave Montana. And so ultimately I realized like, I don't have to like blow everything up. I'm in a fortunate spot as an entrepreneur where I can choose to redesign my company. And that's the thing. I think no one has really, I've never like received that advice from as much business coaching as I do is like, you can change your company. You don't have to keep it the same. Like, what if I was still building Dreamweaver websites, you know, like,
I mean, for the record, it wasn't that long ago. Just technology evolved very quickly. You're not that old. We're not that old.
Yeah. And so like letting a business change, letting products change, and then even like letting the structures change has been terrifying for me, but also like really providing a lot of value and meaning in my life.
Well, that's crazy. I mean, the fact that, you know, you're allowing yourself to almost, I don't want to say make less money or have less control, but I do in a way, to just put yourself first. I think that takes a lot of courage and a lot of determination and awareness of what you actually need to keep growing.
Absolutely. And like, It's been really, yeah, I don't know. I started my whole business from a clapped out laptop. Like, I don't come from any money. I've never had an investor. I don't have a strong support system to turn to. And so like, in terms of like a family of origin or whatever, like I don't come from any money. So like, it doesn't really scare me to take risks, because when you have nothing
to lose,
like, fuck it. And that's why stakes always seemed higher as Wheelie became more and more successful. And we were dealing with 7-figure budgets and, you know, like that was stressful for me, but also, my overhead was $70,000 a month for years, for 10 years. That's how much my payroll, like everything was $70,000 a month in creative work. And so for me, I'm not really making less money. I'm just producing less work and paying fewer employees. I'm like, I don't know. I've scaled it back a little bit, but also I can ramp less risk, but I can also ramp it back up anytime I feel like it. I can open that fire hydrant and just like go for it if I feel like it. So I think I'm just kind of taking this time to like really consider what I want as I move, you know, through the world and what's going to feel the best.
I think that story of like, you know, I don't come from money, I don't have a support to fall back into, that's a very relatable story, because it's the case for most of us, the average, you know, creative or specialist or whatever it is what we do. Do you think luck is kind of a factor in there somewhere? You know, being at the right time, at the right place, with the right people? Or is it just purely hard work?
Both. I think mostly hard work, because I think if you're putting yourself out there, you're finding opportunities. And I think self-awareness is one of the biggest things, like being able to understand how you fit in a meeting room or how you might be perceived, or like being brave enough to go embarrass yourself at outdoor retailer, or like, I don't know. I've like done so many things where I'm just like, well, that was awful. But also putting yourself out there, like, and then, yeah, I put myself through college. I worked 3 jobs, to do that. And, yeah, I've worked a lot of, I mean, I've worked really, really hard. And I do think that like when people start freelancing and they expect to just roll in and find success, I think that's unrealistic. I don't think it's impossible, but I think it's unrealistic. And so, yeah, I think putting in hard work, and then obviously like the concept of like the starting line at which we're all born. Like some people are born at like a farther starting line. Some people are lucky enough to be born, you know, where like maybe they don't have to worry about money, or maybe their parents are business people and can help them, or maybe they have a network that has a lot of venture capitalists or something. So, you know, like everybody's at a different starting line. So I just think like you can't take it too seriously. I think I've been really, 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 really good with money. And that's just from reading
books. What do you mean being good with money?
Being good with money, like managing money, investing it, purchasing properties. Like I built myself a pretty solid life because, not that I had a lot. I just did, I let my money work for me. Right. And so I think that that's something women are maybe like, oh, I'll wait for a husband to buy me a house. And it's like, don't do that.
Right. So where is that urge or that curiosity of managing money well comes from?
I think just from not having any, you know, and wanting to be able to like find that starting line a little further up the football field, if you will. Mm-hmm. And you know, if I have kids, like I think they'll have a pretty solid and fun life, but I think, you know, they'll still have to work for shit, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about privilege, right? Like that's kind of like the hard definition of privilege. So what would you advise to a woman that's starting out their entrepreneurship venture?
Make 2 separate bank accounts, put 30% of everything you make into one of your bank accounts for taxes and things, and just like have that 30% ready. And then if you obviously like make sure you understand the concept of business write-offs. I see a lot of women being like scared or weird about that. So make sure you understand that. And then what's left at the end of the year, after you paid your taxes, like you have that 30% in the bank account, invest it, do something with it. And then obviously pay yourself out of that 70% chunk.
How do you value yourself? Because it's very easy. At least that's the lesson I have to keep relearning every single time I start a new adventure, is to value myself and factor in the value of my time, my work, my expertise into that mm-hmm. bigger number and into that company, into that project. How do you do that from the start point? Or what would be your advice about it?
Oh man, therapy.
Thank you. Rude. I know. Yeah.
No, I mean like definitely like own your shit, figure out like where your money stories come from or don't come from. You know, understand like for instance, I drive a piece of shit truck. Literally there's duct tape on my side view mirror. I think it's hilarious. I don't care what kind of vehicle I drive. People comment a lot. They're like, you should get a new truck. Or like, why do you drive this? And in my mind, I'm just like, cause it's a depreciating asset, bro. Like, you know, I'm like, I don't need to look good. But then there's another part of me that's like, well, what kind of woman would I be if I drove a brand new vehicle? How would I feel different? What kind of woman would I be if I didn't have to worry about breaking down every time I was driving somewhere for work, or like I felt confident every time I
Well, for once you wouldn't have got stuck in Montana, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So like I'm sure I could do a little work around like, what do I think a nice vehicle says? Like, what is my story around that? And you know, like I think I could look at how I value myself in terms of like my story around a nice vehicle. Cause I could go buy myself a nice truck for sure. But at the same time, like, I just don't give a shit.
You value different things. Maybe you get a brand new snowboard cause you need a better board, or, you know,
exactly. Or like, yeah. So I think that, we all tell ourselves these weird little stories, and it's fun to just look at it when you have spare time and be like, why do I feel that way? Or like, why is my computer, like for creatives, why are you working on a 2012 laptop? Like, why? What does that say about you? Like, invest in a nice computer for yourself or not, right? Or like, what's your attachment to that camera? Or what's your attachment to your creative process? And what does it say about you? So I think just being reflective on those things is really important.
You touched on something that I find really interesting, because one thing is, you know, a car or a tool that's not really part of your professional toolbox. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to work, sometimes I see a lot of people that they justify their worth or their expertise by having the latest camera or the latest mm-hmm. equipment. But that also doesn't correlate to me. What's your view on this?
I mean, to quote Chase Jarvis, the best camera is the one you have on you. Ultimately, I think the craft is what, like, you can take really, really great photos with a brand new camera. I had this like crappy GH4, which I think is like a 2011. I think that came out in 2011, that I was shooting on up until a few months ago, when I would take it on like certain types of shoots, because I know how to use it and I can get great images out of it. I did just upgrade to the GH6 and I'm like, hey, this is awesome. This is easier. But at the same time, like, it's the craft. It's the ability to use that item. It's the ability to see light and colors and art direction and like quote unquote clutter in a scene. Like, to be able to take sharp images of people moving quickly through nature, like it's the craft. And so I think that creatives ultimately can they can use technology as like a place to hide behind as well. Like, well, I don't have a nice enough camera. I'll never I'll never be professional because my camera's not nice enough, you know? So I think that there's two sides of that coin. But just getting out there and practicing, I can't say enough about like just doing the work.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Just do the work. To go back to the creative, or to continue in the creative line, you always say, you said it a few times today, and I've seen it through your messaging on your website time and time again, is that the creative work can change the world.
Yes.
What do you mean by that? And how, so I think, how can it change the world?
Oh my gosh, it's like the printing press, I think, you know, obviously brought information to people and brought storytelling to people, and it changed America. Like the invention of the printing press was insane. And then also like, yeah, if you look at COVID, like the thing that unified people, TikTok exploded because people were like doing dumb dances or like playing video games together or like using the creative work to like communicate through challenging times is life-changing. And then also just like having an idea or a way, if you see a way to do something differently, you can't unsee it. And so that once you start actually doing the work to like explain your idea, like that'll change the world too. And you know, whether that's like a new way to like build a backpack as an outdoor brand, or a new technology on how people online shop, I'm working with a really cool company that does that, or like how to build, we work with Machines for Freedom, they're one of the greatest clients I've ever had, like how to build cycling apparel for lots of different size bodies, like basically like having this idea and then being able to execute and communicate will change the world.
I like that. So just a couple of like short questions to kind of wrap up the conversation, summarize everything we said, and kind of have those takeaways to take with us. What is success for you right now?
Oh my God, being able to snowboard every day. That's it. For me, like right now in this moment, that's it.
I love it. What is the advice that it's so good about entrepreneurship that you have had that you definitely want to pass it on, but it's so awful that you definitely want to warn other entrepreneurs not to listen to it?
To go outside and literally look at how nature is structured and build a business model out of that.
Wow.
Yeah. Because the like the stupid little org charts that are all like, it funnels up to one person at the top. That's not how trees work. And like, especially aspen groves, like, yeah, the biggest trees require the most nutrients, but that's also the ones that build new roots and build new trees. So.
Wow. Okay. And what are you excited about next year or the months, upcoming months?
Shooting commercials and videos, long format storytelling. I'm also very excited. We're going to be offering these kits. So they're like, you can sign up for like a brand legacy video kit. And it kind of just like is this really easy creative process that we walk clients through. It's really fun.
Well, I think this was a very unexpected conversation for me to have with you. I've learned a lot, and thank you.
You're a phenomenal interviewer.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoy it, especially when the other person on the other side has a strong story and it's not afraid to say it.
Yeah, you ask amazing questions, so I've really enjoyed this.
Oh, thank you.